KRTN Rato, New Mexico. Outside, we have partly sunny skies. The wind beginning to pick up, 33 degrees here at our KRTN studios. And into the studios comes a familiar face to us. Been around since about 2004 visiting us. Michael Moldenhauer. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Billy. Thanks for having me in this morning.
Well, thanks for coming in. And why are you here?
Why am I here?
Why are you here in Raton?
Well, I'm here because I got an invitation to come and speak to some folks. It's been going on, I guess, since, well, it's been going on for a very long time. I constantly get emails and letters and people asking me to continue the fight and don't give up on Raton, and we're there for you and we support you. And so, aside from coming into town on legal issues from time to time, it's been a long time since I really had a chance to get face-to-face with some individuals and let them ask tough questions if they feel they've got some. And a lot of frustration still flying around, obviously, since 2010 when this got off the rails. So it really started with the Chamber of Commerce sending an invitation, saying would I come speak at a luncheon and trying to coordinate that, and then saying, you know what, maybe this needs to be more than just the Chamber of Commerce. And then on its own, next thing I know, there's a town hall meeting going on last night, and am I prepared to come to that? And of course I am. And I had a chance to meet with Nito yesterday in the afternoon when I first came in, and so probably have six meetings here before the end of the day. So by the time I leave tomorrow, I'll probably have 12 meetings just on the subject of it's time to get everybody back, fired up. And in my opinion, it's time for us to educate the current administration and the current racing commission on who we are and why this was the right decision in 2008.
Yeah, we're still in this. A lot of things happened last night. You were up there for about 2 hours.
Yes, long night.
People don't realize, and we've been following this pretty much for the whole time, and people don't realize just all of the intricacies and everything that is involved in this. You pointed out last night that there were some mistakes made. I'll ask some of the tough questions.
Sure.
What lessons have you learned? I mean, what did you do wrong that you can say at this particular point, we shouldn't have done that?
If I'd have had to look back, I think we wouldn't have been as overzealous on trying to get open. I think that we responded or felt that we were trying to respond to the pressures that facility needed to get open. You know, we lost a year from August 2008 when we got the original order until when all of the, you know, final gaming approvals and things took place in the summer of 2009. So we really lost a whole year where people were all up and excited, and there was all this momentum in the summer of 2008, lots of people excited that we're going to get this thing started. And it really took another year kind of just to get through the regulatory items. Mm-hmm. So then huge expectations start, you know, and here you are, you start breaking the ground. I think realistically we started breaking ground in the fall 2009. And, you know, you get into a permitting process. We obviously had a couple of hiccups along the way there that in a normal course of business, not a big deal. You deal with them and move on. But one thing after another sort of piling on top of each other. If I had to do it over again, I would have said, listen, we're 2 years, which is what we've always said it would take.
Originally, that's what your plan was,
right,
for two
so.
Years. And you pointed out last night that Hobbs, and many people don't realize this either, Hobbs, when they started their track, was, what, 565 days?
That's what I was told by the general manager of Hobbs himself.
Is what it took for them to get going.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were less than, what was it? So from September when we broke ground till May 4th, I mean, you do the math. It's, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
eight, 9 months, whatever it is. It's, I mean, we would have been open in record time. I mean, even if we'd have taken another 4 months to complete, and we thought we could do it, we were a couple of months away from getting finished and actually being open. But, you know, let's say that was, you wanted to give more time for more hiccups that could potentially happen. You still would have been done within a year from when we started the first phase. We had a simulcast license that took us all the way through 2010 to December 31st. And so to be pulling on the plug in May, long before December 31st, just to me didn't seem to make much sense.
Right. And you made another good point last night, too, also, that I didn't realize. And, of course, I'm not in the construction industry. That is your business. But with my experience with any sort of construction, I can't think of one particular project that has come on time.
Right.
You don't see that. And so you made a comment last night that the timelines that you were giving were not necessarily for the racing commission or for the public. They were to get your trades motivated and getting going, because if you said, oh, well, we'd be open in a year, then it probably would be after a year.
Right.
So you're saying, okay, we could get this in 9 months, hoping that you could get that year window.
Right.
And that's,
well, I mean, and
a
that's
part
I
of
mean,
the beast.
Exactly. So, I mean, your issue is that you get in there and you say, okay, you know, here's a time frame that we'd like to be open by. And, of course, that date keeps moving on you because you really can't set a date until you get through the regulatory piece. So if you'd asked me, when would you open in August of 08, after we first got the order, you know, I'd have said to you, here's the timeline, not anticipating you would lose 2 or 3 months to Lordsburg, another 2 or 3 months to wait to have to get a racing license started in early 2010 because of, you know, the regulatory issues you needed to follow, some of the licensing issues that came and became pretty prominent in my life with my partner at that time. All of those things, I mean, you just don't anticipate those in August of 2008. You don't run away from them. You don't pretend they don't exist, but you got to deal with them. And it takes time. And unfortunately, you know, a year took and went by. And I think that became a valuable year. So to go back and answer your question, if I had to do it over again, I would have done a better job in not in trying to manage the expectations on when would be a date for opening. Because what happened was you'd have media coming to the Racing Commission meetings. They would hear us giving updates, technical updates to the Racing Commission, which we did every single month. And then all of a sudden that became gospel, like as if that was interpreted that that was your official opening date.
Right.
To the point where the media was actually setting opening dates for the Gaming Control Board for us. I mean, it just got so out of hand.
And the Gaming Control Board, when they originally took the license away in May, they never said that you had not met a deadline. That was not a reason for, I mean, there, that was not a part of it. But because of so much emphasis and so much attention on this, you kind of got roped into this corner through no fault of your own.
Well, I mean, candidly, the decision they made on May the 4th, they ended up abandoning. So when we went and appealed their decision, instead of defending our appeal, decided to invoke another clause, which was, it doesn't matter because you didn't race, and if you didn't race, you're not entitled to your renewal of your gaming license anyways. So, I mean, I feel very strongly about some of the injustices that took place. Clearly, we went out to build a racetrack for Raton. We weren't asking for a temporary racetrack meet for 2010, and that was it. No person in their right mind would go to invest $50 million to build a facility for one season. How would you ever possibly make that happen? The order is pretty clear. It says 2010 and thereafter.
Thereafter.
And I was very pleased with the judge's decision that, I mean, to quote him at that time, the hearing in September, he said, if it, you were there, I mean, you heard him. He said, if it ain't right, it ain't legal, and something here feels like it ain't right as far as what took place. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, and maybe
sure,
taking a few words out of context, but that was very rewarding, I think, for me to actually see that someone else outside of the administrative process was recognizing that some injustices did take place.
Okay. Speak of the legal issues. Where are we right now?
We really haven't even started. I mean, unfortunately, you're really at the start of the process. We're still dealing with just the injunction. I mean, I have Sam looking to file some pretty significant lawsuits that I've really been holding him back for, because I'm not looking to create more pressure and tension in an otherwise already tension environment. And what I'd like to see happen is a resolution. And I know that the moment that things become more aggressive, then it's obviously just going to create more tension and get in the way of a resolution. So candidly, we're just, I mean, we haven't even really started the legal process. All we've done is filed for an injunction to protect our rights that they can't try and go and give it to somebody else. So we've been successful on two occasions, one in September, and then the Racing Commission came back with a couple other parties to try and get him to overturn his earlier ruling on adding additional technical grounds on why he may have erred in his September ruling, and he did not agree with them, and we were successful in defeating those requests a second time. It's now been referred up to the Court of Appeals, obviously because of the seriousness of it, and I guess in the anticipation it was going to get there anyways. So we have to follow, you know, we'll continue to monitor that process. regardless of what happens with the injunction, this thing doesn't go away. It's not going to rise or shine on whether you have an injunction to prevent them from doing something. You know, what took place shouldn't have taken place, and people need to be held accountable for it, and hopefully we don't end up down that road.
But that's not your goal.
Clearly.
Is to get this through the courts and get a big settlement, et cetera.
No.
Your goal is to build a racetrack, which you said last night.
Yes. Okay. I mean, as I've also articulated, there has been numerous occasions since 2008 where I've been approached by parties to see if I'd be interested into moving this license to another jurisdiction. And that was not my interest. Could have made a lot of money doing it, but that was not my interest. And, you know, that just is not where my reality is.
Now, the settlement, you touched on that. There is a settlement that was negotiated between the Assistant Attorney General's office and you. And this was presented to the New Mexico Racing Commission. Well, I get lost in the timeline, too. I don't know how you keep it straight. But this was put forth, and it's pretty revealing. I mean, it's a put-up-or-shut-up sort of settlement.
Yes, to quote Sam, it is a complete put-up-or-shut-up.
And that's still on the table.
And
it stipulates what?
Well, I think there was 8 or 9 items, but it effectively said, if I'm going back from memory, it's over a year ago that we prepared that. It said that we would have X number of days, and they weren't many, I think there were 30 days, to do the following. And if we achieved A, B, C, D, E, then the Racing Commission would agree to, you know, reset the clock, if you will, and go back in time to before May the 4th. So the minutes of settlement, I think, were things like we agreed to put $10 million up in escrow. We agreed to discharge all of the liens. If we couldn't discharge the liens because the parties couldn't agree on numbers, then we would agree to pay those monies into court. And so at least people are assured so that the liens would be bonded off, in effect, and be removed from title. So there were a number of items that went into those settlements, and they were intended to be put up or shut up items with the concept that demonstrate to them the sincerity that he's not here for a damage claim. He's here because he wants to build a racetrack, and he's here because he's got the capital and the ability to do it. And if he doesn't put up in 30 days, he's gone. He's going to give up all his rights for appeal, and people can move on and do whatever they want. It seemed like a pretty no-brainer to me.
Okay. So that's still on the table, but still has not been addressed.
Yes.
And that's part of the reason that you are here, is to re-energize this with the new administration.
I think the underlying issue is the following. A light went off in my head in the last week that said, Michael never got this license. This wasn't Michael that got this approved in 2008. If the Racing Commission would have come to Raton and met with me, by myself, with nobody else, this never would have got approved. They went to Tucumcari and had 800 people show up. So Michael Moldenhauer by himself was not going to compete against the force and the presence that existed, say, for example, in Tucumcari. Or Santa Fe, for that matter.
Right.
But what we did was, we did a collective effort where all the stakeholders, all the residents, all the economic different associations, the neighboring communities, their mayors, their councils, their commissions, senators, representatives, everybody got together and we put on, in my opinion, the equivalent of an Olympic bid. And the parties did an amazing job. Well, in all fairness to the current administration, they don't know me and they don't know this community and they don't know how passionate they were about this racetrack. Well, we got to educate them if we're looking for a resolution. And I think that's what the time has come for us to do.
Okay. In other words, we're all shareholders in this.
We certainly are.
Yeah. All right. You touched on the land and the liens, and I think that's an important issue that people are concerned about.
Right.
Where the tent is, and you made no bones last night saying that tent is not what you wanted at all.
Right.
Explain a little bit about how that tent got there, and then we'll back up and say talk about the land itself.
Well, again, the passing of time from 2008 to 2009, expectations that people wanted to see something get open. I mean, there wasn't a week that passed that you didn't get a call about when are you guys opening, when are you guys opening, when are you guys opening. So we were trying to respond. And in fact, I think to our detriment, we shouldn't have responded. We should have said, no, we need 12 months, not 6 months, to get the first temporary facility open, and this is what it's... I mean, we had it all designed. The thing was fully drawn by the architects and ready for permit and ready for tender. So, you know, we went sideways at the last minute only because, and after much debate, even with the contractor involved and the various consultants, that we could get a tent up in 6 months and have something operational and live, and then, you know, be starting to generate purses and get some excitement and momentum. And I don't think we ever anticipated that we'd be where we are today. So, you know, again, if you had something to do over, that certainly would be one of them as well.
Right. And per se, the commission suggested that you use New Mexico contractors, and you helped them along with that, and you did that.
We certainly
did. That was one of the things there. Things changed as far as the licensing for the tent itself. Started off as a tent structure, a non-permanent structure, and then somewhere along the game, the rules changed and it had to be a permanent structure.
Right.
And so then you had to go back in and redesign and just start all over again, right, essentially.
I mean, and that's a frustrating process. And that's an important point to note because, you know, anybody, just think of it as simple as building your own home, okay? You as a homeowner, you're about to build your home, your dream home, and your architect designs plans. You put them into the building department, they review them and say, everything's fine, or change this, change that, and then once you do that, everything's fine. And then they issue a permit. And then you go to tender and you develop a whole system of construction plan, timelines, trades, implementation. And you get into it, and halfway into it, someone comes and says, oh, just a minute, that's not the way this should have been permitted. This should have been permitted another way. And now they want a pole in the middle of your family room. And they want another pole in the middle of your bathtub. And they want another pole structurally in the middle of your kitchen. And you're saying, just a minute, this is not the house that I designed. This is not the house that I'm going to live in or build in. This is not what we signed up for. Because what you'd have done was, if you'd have known that at the beginning, you wouldn't have started construction. You would have made the changes to the drawings before you started so you could have addressed those issues. Now we've had to go back, and I think we had to add something like 16 or 18 columns to that structure. Go back, dig the slat up, go back, pour the foundations, order the additional steel. That could have been just as easily done the first time around. So it becomes more expensive to
do. Everyone knows change orders are the most expensive.
Yeah. Takes more time, frustrates the heck out of everybody. You get stop work orders in the face. All of a sudden, the lenders get concerned.
Okay.
Trades get concerned.
So is that where the liens then came in?
100%. 100%. I mean, you get into a period of time where we were making monthly payments to the general contractor, and then you got to a period of time once the stop work orders hit. And this is no surprise to anybody. I mean, we communicated on a daily basis with the contractor the need to have to get the liens removed in order to get an advance made. Mm-hmm. And even tried a couple of steps for that to happen. And then the next thing that transpired in addition to that was out-of-state engineers having to participate in trying to get the permits back online. My recollection is it took us almost 2 months. Mm-hmm. To get the redesign done to satisfy CID. CID was very responsive with us. Like, I'm not blaming CID. I'm frustrated that obviously I went through a process that they issue one permit and then stop it and force you to, you know, change significantly mm-hmm. the details of what should have been caught the first time around, in my opinion. But that's not, you know, I'm not putting blame on, or I'm not criticizing what they were like to deal with, because the moment that did happen, for whatever reasons, that was brought up to have to happen halfway through construction. For whatever reasons that took place, they were very responsive in meeting with us, with our consultants. I went even up once to Santa Fe with one of their senior staff at CID, and they went out of their way to assist us to try and get it done.
And you made the comment last night that there's no bank in the world that is going to lend any construction or lend any developer or keep the money flowing if it's got a lien on the land. And if there's a stop work order, I mean, they just the money just it's cut off.
Those are conditions precedent to any construction advance that I've ever been involved in, and I've certainly done quite a few of them. And I would suggest to you that anybody building any kind of structure where a bank is advancing construction money against would search title the day of the advance, make sure there's no liens, and would ensure that there's no problems with the building permits.
Okay. Well, the tent is sort of then like an idol out there. I mean, it's sort of a testament to what is going to be done and what could be done. It's still up. I mean, it's in pretty good shape.
Listen,
actually,
I felt some pretty good winds in my hotel room this morning. That wind was gusting pretty strong this morning, and I come out the front door of the hotel and it's still standing. So,
and any plans with that tent? Can we do anything with?
There's a lot of infrastructure underneath that tent. So, aside from the structure itself, the actual canvas and the steel that's holding it, there's quite a bit of infrastructure that's already in there. It's a part of the master plan. We looked at a truck stop being a component of the master plan, so that could actually house that component. Obviously, the off-ramp becomes a significant issue for that in a timing standpoint. I tell you, I'd be prepared to go forward with that today in the face of all of this. If the timing for the off-ramp that could accommodate the truck traffic that would need to get into there would work. In fact, we contemplated that and had some discussions with the city about that last year so that people would see we're serious and that we're ready to move forward and so on. So trying to make something out of, you know, whatever we've got to work with at the moment. So monitoring that, the off-ramp completion is obviously going to be a critical item to be able to bring that to fruition. So the intent is hopefully to be able to use all of that underground infrastructure that's in place. And be able to replace the canvas type tent with a typical steel building.
Okay. All right. But obviously can't do anything till those liens are taken care of. Now, this actually is the third site.
Yes.
I mean, this is this thing. The journey began in 2004. And first looked at the old La Mesa Park site.
The first site I visited with Eric Culver was the original racetrack. And all the work and drawings and engineering that was put in initially was put into retrofitting the original site and restoring it to its glory. And then quickly realized that that just feasibly wouldn't work for a number of reasons. But the predominant reason, I think, was the stables.
Not enough room.
Yeah. So the oval itself... probably could have worked. I think the commission was looking for a 1 mile oval, and so that potentially wouldn't have worked. But the stables were the biggest issue. A, Eric didn't like the idea of horses having to climb up from the lower area where the stables used to be, that there was some resistance to that in years past.
And they wanted more barns.
And the challenge was more barns. So at the time, they were telling us that an application would have to require 1,200 barns, and there was just not the physical ability to accommodate that. That ended up being 1,500 barns, so that only would have magnified that problem that
okay.
much further.
Okay, so...
So that's property one.
Property one, design, concept, et cetera, deposits, et cetera.
I don't know where the deposit side were, because that was really the previous group that brought me in.
Okay.
Had done most of that initial work when I first got involved. And then property two ended up becoming the site, which was had the airstrip...
the airport.
Which is owned by the International Bank. And that obviously had a lot of great frontage on I-25, had some access issues that we needed to address, had zoning issues that we needed to address, and you were really back at square one. So here you are now, you're starting the project again from a design, engineering, feasibility, zoning standpoint on property two. And we went through that property for a number of years. We were continually putting up non-refundable deposits to the bank to get them to agree to extend the purchase date such that it could coincide with an approval, an inevitable approval that would come from the Racing Commission. And then in 2008, on the inevitable visit from the Racing Commissioners and the site visit, took them out there, to our surprise, they weren't that happy with that site. And although they were overly impressed with Raton and got and understood the significance of completing the Northern Circuit and understood the importance of how much heritage of racing was in this community and the fact that Raton was the first racetrack in the state, and the overwhelming response that they got to witness at the Schuller Theater, I think, that day and that night. All that combined, they still didn't really like the site and pointed across the interstate and said, "That's where you should be." So that gave rise to site number three.
One of the commissioners actually came and talked to you
sure.
and said, "This is good, but it's not good enough."
Well, the issue was you know, our question was why, mm-hmm. And the response I got was that the simulcast signal that you're going to sell and broadcast to across the country is going to boast the glory and the beauties of New Mexico. And look at those beautiful backdrops you have there as a scenery. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you're going to have a whole bunch of tractor trailers running up and down highway traffic in the middle of that signal, and you really belong on the other side, so your views would be unobstructed. So there was no other way to lay out a track. If you looked the other way, you'd have been looking at a housing development rather than the backdrop of the mountain. So unfortunately, that was really what was required. And I picked up the phone and said, okay, who owns the property across the street and how do we make that happen?
Okay.
And quickly, the local government and went to work on addressing the issues that were necessary to now replace property two to become property three. So a whole new set of legals and agreements.
And drawings.
Zoning and drawings and back to square one and here you go again. And then, of course, across the street, the off-ramp in the infrastructure and access was going to become an issue. So that gets drawn into a little bit of a process with a state agency in that that doesn't happen very quickly. And so you're constantly moving and adjusting your plans because they might want you 60 feet back one way or 60 feet another, and there were some dedications and roadway right-of-ways that were going to have to be dedicated. So I think there were four or five different design concepts of how that off-ramp actually could work. And, you know, all those have an impact.
So the land itself, then, give us an update. There's been a lot of questions on the land that the city owns. How did that come about, and what is the agreement there at this particular point?
So when the commissioners pointed to the land across the street, the lands they were pointing to ended up being the lands owned by the city, unbeknownst to any of us. I didn't even know who the owner was at that time because I wasn't dealing with the other side of the interstate. And so I had reached out, I forget if it was to the lawyer or who, and asked, you know, who owns the land across the street, then found out it was the city, contacted the city and said, you know, here's the realities that we're dealing with, and then the city had to make a decision on whether that was something that they were willing to entertain, and then there was a valuation process, as I understand, they went through to determine numbers, and we came to an agreement that that seemed to make sense for both sides, and
the,
here you are.
And the agreement is that you would put a racetrack and casino on the land.
Yeah, I don't remember the actual verbiage that's in it,
yeah.
But effectively was that the consideration would be given if you were to achieve, you know, getting the right to build the racetrack.
Okay,
and if it didn't happen and you still wanted to develop the land, you know, so to protect me that if I'm spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in infrastructure-related items, meaning a truck stop or something, then you could still have a dollar amount if you weren't doing
fair market value.
Right, and so we would pay the dollar, I forget what it was, but whatever was established at that time, we agreed to, and so if that's where we end up becoming, then that'll end up being a reality.
Okay, all right. Speaking of investments, Baltimore came up.
Yes.
And what's the situation now there?
Well, Baltimore is not unlike Raton in some respects. It kind of went through a process that was disappointing. We've had some successes on the legal front. In that environment, the state's still holding a $3 million deposit of mine, so I don't think that chapter's completely written. And, you know, hopefully we can reach some kind of resolution there. Those matters are actually going, I think, before the Court of Appeals in March. But, you know, we did a lot of work in Baltimore, and I think we sort of touched on it briefly last night, but if there's one thing that demonstrates capability, is that in February of 2009, when the depth of the financial crisis were as prominent as they were, to the extent that I tell the story that, you know, you put on CNN at night, you didn't know whether your bank was going to be there the next day or not, never mind whether they were lending any money. In the depth of all of that, Wachovia, Wells Fargo, had enough comfort with me to issue $150 million document to the Racing Commission. So I think that speaks volume on my ability to raise capital. I won't mislead you and suggest that the last 2 years have not been challenging, because I don't think there's a builder or developer in North America that hasn't, or around the world, that hasn't felt the impacts of this economy. But you know, listen, I'm still here, and I'm still ready to do it, and put up or shut up, call my bluff, see if I have it or if I don't, and the easiest way is a minutes of resolution.
You've invested, what, something like $5
million? $5 million plus liens of another million, so you're probably looking at close to $6 million today.
Okay. Why?
Why invest it?
Why have you gone through this process?
Well, I mean, it started initially in 2004. I think it was a $450,000 number. So I made whole the parties that had spent money to that point. Legals, engineering, architecture, all that kind of stuff.
And you were told, you said last night at the meeting, that for that $450,000, you'd have a racing license in 90 days.
90 days. 2004. Hard to believe it's 2012. Or for that matter, 2008, 4 years later. And, you know, this is the third governor since I was, I think, introduced to this project. This is the third mayor since I was first introduced to this project. So we've got strong convictions. And as I said last night, we've become very infected with this community. And, you know, I thought about it this morning, actually. The last 4 or 5 years, I'm here with my family on a summer vacation. I'm not in Florida. I'm not somewhere else up at a cottage or whatever. I've been bringing my family here to New Mexico for their summer vacations, and they've come to love and learn about New Mexico as much as I have, so, and developed some great relationships here. It's nice to see.
Well, and so you're looking for support. We're all at stake in here. You said something last night about you're looking to start a committee, to organize a committee.
It seems like that is a natural thing to happen next. There is this groundswell of support, people kind of feeling like they don't know what they can do. What do we do next? In fact, one of the gentlemen came up last night at the end of it and came over and says, what do I do? Like, what do you want us to do? We want to do whatever you want us to do. What is it that we could do? And my response at the moment is, I don't know, because this has kind of just happened very quickly. But having said that, I think the right thing to do is to put a group together that can help articulate information in real time so that you avoid some of the miscommunications that can occur in the absence of that, and quiet down the rumor mill a little bit and keep people focused on the goal and the end zone. And I think also we need to deal with some of the divisive nature that's sort of transpired since this thing got off the rails, which I think A is very natural. You know, things get off the rails, people get frustrated, perhaps don't know all the facts, get misinformation, hear different promises of potentially maybe some other opportunities. And the realities are, is that Raton never got a bid. Tucumcari Carey got a bid filed, and Penn was pretty vocal that their bid was ready to go in, but no one ever stepped up from Raton, to my knowledge, to this day. So from 2004, when I first came to this community, I don't know of anybody else that's been willing to invest money or has stepped up and responded to the call to action to build a racetrack here. So I'd like, you know, people to get back focused on you got a bird in the hand, and we need to play this out. And if I end up losing in 1 year or 10 years or whatever it is, and this thing goes up for rebid and they want to get behind someone else at that stage, all the power to them. But at the moment, that's got nothing to do with today. Today, the realities are we've got an injunction stopping the Racing Commission from being able to do anything until they deal with us, and we need to find a way to convince this current administration and the Racing Commission that the decision that was made in 2008 was the right decision, and for those reasons, this thing should reach a settlement.
Okay. You know, we don't usually do, it's a political thing, we don't do recommendations that tell people who to vote for, but I personally am with you on this. I've been through the process. I've seen it all.
Yes.
And there many times, as you said, this is a huge issue. This
yes.
is so complicated.
Yes.
And many entities pulling at it. So you're getting it from all angles. That's a lot of balls to keep in the air, a
yes.
lot to juggle. And to still keep after it, I think, speaks a lot about your character.
And I appreciate your support, well, and you and I acknowledge that you've been there from the early days, and mm-hmm. we've gone out of our way to make sure that whether it was Eric or Rick Henson or whoever was in town, you know, took a point to trying to communicate visit with you every chance sort of we had, if there was a story to be told that would keep the public informed. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, I mean, I'll be candid, the last couple of years, you've become so embattled with or embroiled with legal stuff that you take your eye off the ball. So you just become overwhelmed. I mean, please appreciate, you get in front of that courtroom, and I got assistant attorney generals in their capacity, and now some pretty high-priced lawyers for some couple other players, you know, that you're having to contend with. And they're constantly filing motions and petitions and legal arguments, and it's not even involving me anymore. This is really Sam's gig. He just copies me on the materials. But you get caught up in it. And I think now time has passed, and it feels like it's the right time. It's happening on its own. This isn't something that I did. This is something I dreamed up. I got an invitation. I've responded to the invitation. As a result of that response, so many more people are asking to participate, and it's happening naturally on its own. So I'm responding to that natural call to action, and I think we might have something here. I think we actually can start to exercise some of the political capital that may exist here in the northeastern part of the state.
Very good. Build it and they will run.
Yes. Hopefully. That is definitely an objective.
I'd just like to interject one point again. I think it's very important, Mike. You're dealing with a new governor, a new racing commission.
Yes.
And that is the purpose, to reboot the enthusiasm that Raton had.
Yes.
And wanting a racetrack.
I agree with you 100%. If there's one thing that we got out of last night is that there's a lot of power that can come out of that room. The last time I was on that stage was 2008, and there was a lot of power in that room. And such that we ended up with that order in 2008 from the Racing Commission that it would go to Raton. Now we got to re-educate them. We got to go back to work. I wish it wasn't the case, and I'm sure the residents wish it wasn't the case. But what's the alternative? I sit back and wait for Sam Bregman to tell me when the next hearing is, and wait for residents to keep calling me and telling me what can we do, what can we do? Well, here's something we can do. We can get back together and try and figure out a campaign that convinces people that this, it's time for a settlement.
There's nothing that moves the political sphere more than the public. Senator Campos was there last night,
yes,
giving his full support. And Tomas Garcia was there as well.
Yes.
So
I was very pleased. I was actually taken a little aback by how aggressive Senator Campos believes in the project, not only in Raton, but in our continual pursuit for this. And he highlighted for me some of the collateral issues that are important to him, like the community college, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he has aggressively agreed to assist in any way, shape, or form. And, of course, we're going to welcome that. And it's time for us to put a strategy together, and that committee hopefully can help assist with me understanding some of the local issues and making sure that we haven't excluded anybody and that everybody's included and we all rise above whatever tensions exist and whatever factions exist and all come back and say, this is what we're all after is a racetrack. Let's get this damn thing done.
Okay, very good. And communication, big issue. So
yes,
you've opened the lines, reopened the lines again, and we'll be talking on a regular basis.
Very good.
Okay.
Rick Henson and Donna Henson speak with me on a regular basis as well, so you can feel free to reach out to them.
Good.
And as this starts to gain a little momentum, hopefully we'll have more to communicate and more of a call to action as far as what residents can actually help us do.
If people would like to help, how can they?
I think at this stage it needs us to kind of get things organized and come back and say, okay, here's what the strategy is going forward, and here's what we think you can do. And obviously we need a way to communicate that, so whether that's through yourself and the newspaper and so on, me coming back and maybe having another town hall meeting.
Or the chamber.
Yes, or the Chamber of Commerce, exactly. So I need to make sure that I'm not a resident from here. So what's important is that people that are listening to this program and yourselves and other stakeholders that were there last night, is that for them not to be shy in reaching out and letting me know what their feelings are. Because I do not want to leave anybody out. And there might be something in somebody's relationship. Many people have many relationships that in of themselves could produce fruit that I have no idea of. Mm-hmm. And we need to leverage that.
You mentioned last night just how far-reaching La Mesa Park and that legacy is.
Yes.
And that's why in trying to find a appropriate name for it, it always came back to La Mesa Park.
Yes.
Because of its long history and people in New York and throughout the country,
yes,
throughout the world.
Yes.
Have been influenced and have fond memories of this place.
2004, I didn't know where New Mexico was. And for that to evolve into every time I'm on a business trip talking about Raton, New Mexico, To my surprise, how many people actually knew that part of the world or vacationed there as a family or attended some of the race meets, or amazing, just overwhelming. So it just seemed natural that if we were going to not have to re-educate the world on where Raton, New Mexico was, the best way to do it was to build on its history and people associated that with La Mesa.
Okay, great. Michael Moldenhauer, thank you very much.
Really nice to see you again.
And good to see you.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking. Okay.
On behalf of the Chamber, yes. Thank you for showing up, and we'll be meeting with you later, Michael.
Yes, you will. Thank you. Okay. Good morning.
9:12 a.m. here in the Rocky Mountain West. One of our This, That, and the Other sponsors is the First National Loan Production Office.